Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. I'm filling in tonight for my friend and colleague, George Norrie, who has the evening off. Very glad to be with you on this fine Friday night. Happy New Year to all of you. I guess the world's still here, and who knows what lurks for all of us in the months ahead. I suppose the prudent thing to do, if you give any credence at all to prophecies of planetary doom or societal gloom, is to live life to the fullest for the next 11 months. Do things you've always wanted to do. Travel to exotic places. Take some chances. Act like a kid. Tell your secret crush how you feel. Just kind of go for it. And then if the Earth doesn't explode or implode or vanish or erupt, what have you lost? Maybe some dignity? Or some inhibitions. I mean, what the heck? It is Friday, so most of the evening will be dedicated to open lines tonight, whatever might be on your mind. Maybe it's a question you have for me about some of the crazy stuff I have pursued over the past 20-plus years of chasing weirdness and mysteries, or a story you've been wanting to tell about strange things that have happened to you or your loved ones. As usual, the program is only as good as you make it. The listeners are always an essential part of the Coast equation, so give me the good stuff. I want your A game. Think about it, and then when we open the phone lines in an hour or so, blow me away with your best material. I'm anxious to hear it. To set the stage for your calls, I'll be joined in a few minutes from now by a first-time author and first-time guest on Coast. Her name is Marion Williams. She's co-authored a new book. It's called It's a Metaphysical World. Chock full of unusual tales, the kind of things that have been reported by regular people around the world, people just like you and me, events involving spirits, out-of-body experiences, Ouija boards, paranormal entities, the kind of things that are right up our alley. I just cracked the book open yesterday, and I'm still plowing through it. Fun stuff, well-written, and I'm confident you'll enjoy our conversation with Marion, and I'm hoping it stimulates some memories or mysteries that you've had bottled inside, perhaps for a long time. Dan Galante and I have assembled an eclectic mix of music as usual. Some of it kind of obscure or forgotten. We think you'll enjoy most of our selections anyway. And webmaster Sean and I have an expansive list of oddities culled from the news of the past week or so. It's on the Coast website under the Knapp's News section. Among those items, an impassioned plea from astronaut Buzz Aldrin about why America needs to get back into the space race, why it's in our best interest, what we can get out of it. You know where I stand on that one. But do we want to pay for it? I'm not sure we want to pay for anything anymore. Also on our list, a very unusual report about an experiment by Pentagon scientists. This article from Wired says they have essentially figured out how to create what they're calling a time hole, a way that they can bend light and make people and activities basically invisible. Very similar to what Bob Lazar told me they were trying to do out at Area 51 way back in the late 1980s, and now they've apparently done it. Check out this story. Very interesting stuff. We all remember the great Hitchcock horror movie, The Birds. Now some scientists think they know what happened, what caused birds to go a little bit crazy back in the early 60s in the Monterey Bay area in Northern California, rather Central California. An incident which inspired Hitchcock's film. It's a fun article. I think you'll enjoy reading it. We have a cool and entertaining article from our friend and colleague Alejandro Rojas. It's a list of the best, strangest, most important UFO stories of 2011, the year just passed. I'll bet there are a couple of them that you've either never saw, never knew about, or you forgot about them. Interesting reading. And there's one other story on our Knapp's News list that I think will cause at least the guys in the audience to grimace a little bit. It's about a celebrity fisherman who caught this weird fish, a fish that's been dining on certain body parts of male anglers who live in a fairly exotic locale. This is one I think that'll make you wake up at night with the cold sweats. You'll see what I mean when you read this thing. A couple of quick news items. Mount Etna in Italy Have you seen this story on the news? Because I haven't seen it on television. I've read about it online. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest volcano. It's active again. Blew its top yesterday morning, spewing smoke and ash 3 miles into the air. I had no idea until I read this that Etna erupted 18 times last year. So far this time, though, no deaths or injuries have been reported, nor has it interfered yet with air travel. A tragic story out of New Zealand, a ballooning accident took the lives of 11 people. Witnesses say this hot air balloon was on fire when it came crashing down in a rural area of New Zealand. Everyone on board was killed. And the brutal government of Syria is vowing to react with a, quote, iron fist to any further domestic disturbances, which the dictator there labels as a threat to his national security. Although I think his personal security is probably more like it. A bomb exploded today in Syria's capital, killing 25 people. The government says it's the work of terrorists and will likely use that terrorist excuse to justify further crackdowns on its own people. Doesn't seem like that situation's going to have a happy ending, and I'm sure there will be calls for U.S. intervention. Can't be very far away. I've been running hard since early this morning here in Las Vegas, chasing a pretty big story locally anyway, and I'll tell you about it tonight if we get the chance to talk about it. Think it might be something you'd find of interest, as it might apply to your own communities. It involves the school police here in Las Vegas and a major scandal that I've been following and reporting on for the past 6 months. Kind of came to a head today. We'll get into that a little bit later if the circumstances allow it. Time now for our first break. When we come back, Marion Williams. It's a Metaphysical World. I'm George Knapp, in tonight for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm in tonight for my friend George Norrie, who has the night off. I'm joined now by Marion Williams, who's the co-author of a new book called It's a Metaphysical World. Marion is a wife, mother, grandmother, and a student of art and philosophy. She's a certified practitioner of various healing arts and has a passion for travel. Her stories in this new book, and there are a heck of a lot of really interesting ones, come from all over the globe, and a lot of them are personal. Marion, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Now, I said it's all in your biography. Among the other things that you've done, you were a newscaster, broadcaster?
Well, I was actually a weather girl. I was part of the news team, but I was a weather girl, and I was also a interviewer at one time on television, but that's close to 40 years ago.
Did you ever cover paranormal stuff when you were an interviewer?
No, it wasn't really a topic that was well received in those years.
Well, it's still true. That's still true among news people. How many of the experiences in the book are ones that you had personally? Because you cover a pretty broad scope.
I do cover most of them either happened to me personally or happened within my family or very close friends in my section. And in the section written by Elena, the same holds true. All of the stories we're intimately connected with. You know, they're friends that we've known for a very long time, or they're my family, or it's my stories, my own family stories, going back, you know, over 50, 60 years.
So this is not stuff you just culled from the internet or rumors that you heard. You've been told these stories by people you know, relatives, people you trust.
That's right. And not only that, we had our subjects for the stories that went outside the family and that I don't have intimate knowledge of, we had our subjects sign off on them as being true. Now, we also know these people extremely well because they dine out with us on Friday nights and have done so for about 10 years. You know, so they're well known to us. We can vouch for them. But more than that, they've been prepared to sign on a dotted line that they've told us the truth. Now, we have changed some salient facts, like we've been very vague as to street names and, you know, personal names. And we had to change that because it offers people some privacy because jobs are impacted and real estate is impacted with paranormal stories.
Oh, I fully understand that. And sometimes it's the only way to get people to tell you that stuff.
Well, you wouldn't believe it, but amongst our friends, some husbands had not told their wives their stories, and some wives had not told their husbands.
Well, actually, I would believe that. I would believe it. The scope is amazing of the kinds of things that you talk about: intuition, synchronicity, past lives, soul memories, astral travel, time warps, healings, hauntings, sightings. I mean, you cast a wide net.
We do. But those are the experiences that are in our immediate circle, which is extraordinary when you think about it, because these are ordinary people. So if ordinary people are having this many, you know, this type of experience and these many experiences, it's probably hugely more common than we even dream.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here. We hear these kinds of stories pretty much every night when our listeners call in to tell us about their own experiences.
Yes.
Tell me, at what point are you gather these stories, you've been hearing them your whole life, at what point do you decide, wow, we could make a book out of this?
2 years ago. 2 years ago, we decided, well, we'll see what happens. At that time, I thought I might have 10 personal stories. But when I sat down to actually consider my life, there were so many more. And I had to leave a good deal out, because for the years that I worked in the legal field, I signed a confidentiality agreement. So, of course, I had to leave a great many stories out, because I would have breached, you know, contracts that I'd made with my employer. So I could only tell certain stories.
This story about the Ouija board, is that yours? I know it's written in the first person. But I couldn't really tell if it's you or your co-author.
The part one is me, and the Ouija board is my story.
Well, let's start with that. Why don't you tell it?
Well, with the Ouija, do you want me to read it?
No, not really. No, I'd rather you tell it to us.
Okay. When I was in Japan as a very young woman, I was posted overseas. But before I was posted overseas in New Zealand, in my hometown, I was a university student, and a bunch of our friends at university, they were science students actually, had held some seances in their home with the Ouija board. And they had made contact with someone and been able to prove his existence in life and all of the circumstances that he relayed to them on the board. And I was very, very intrigued with this, extremely intrigued. And I wanted to be part of the experiments. But unfortunately, my posting came up and I left for overseas. So I knew what they'd been doing, how they'd done it. And I was so intrigued that I set about making my own board in Japan. And I had my co-workers come around to our flat, and we set up the board ourselves and made contact. Now, some of the girls got rather uncomfortable and they left. So in the end, there were only two of us with this Ouija board. But we did make contact, and this person, this entity who came, said that he had known me in life, and I was very intrigued with this, and so I said, well, you know, what's your name? And it didn't ring a bell. But then he said he watched me walk down a certain street. And it just the way the word selection and the street name, it alarmed me terribly, because I had always been terrified of that street. In fact, I used to walk, you know, a good distance out of my way up a very steep hill to avoid it.
For no particular reason, just a feeling?
I got a creepy feeling when I was on that street. And so I avoided it, because I always went with my gut instinct. If it didn't feel right, I never did whatever didn't feel right. And I used to feel really creeped out on that road. So I'd walk huge amounts of distance, right up a steep hill, add half an hour to my journey even. And so I thought, I don't like this much. I don't like the fact that he said watch. He didn't say see, he said watch. So I decided, well, I'm not very keen on this. At the same time, my friend noted my upset, but she also looked behind me and noticed that there was a man standing there with he was garbed in black with a black hat. Now, I should tell you that my friend was a Maori girl from New Zealand. She's actually a Maori princess. She was very, very psychic, much more than me. And she said to me, it's awful. And so we decided, like, that's enough. We stopped the game, stopped recording the information he was giving us. And he picked up or managed to pick up a glass and heave it across the room. It hit the wall, which in Japan is made of paper, reinforced paper, But the force was so strong that it hit the wall and then bounced off the floor and shattered. And by this time, we were absolutely freaked out. And my friend wanted to get out of there any way she could, so she headed for the balcony, and I stopped her because we were several stories up, and I said, no, don't. We can't have any accidents. And then very shortly thereafter, another friend of mine arrived and knocked at the door and came in and wanted to take me out for supper. But as he stepped in, he said, oh, my God, I don't know what you've been doing in here, but I don't want any part of it. And he took off. And that reinforced to us that we weren't imagining this. There was something really awful in our flat. And despite the fact we had tried to break off contact, it wasn't having it. So we didn't know what to do. And then I thought to myself, well, we need someone really good here because this is a very bad entity. So we need someone really good to dispel it. So we both thought of the same person, who's the man I'm now married to. And we rang him up and said we were very badly frightened and could he come over? And he didn't even ask why. He just said, sure. And he came over and we wouldn't let him go home. We made him stay. And as he walked in, the spirit left and it stayed gone. And that was remarkable to me. Just by his appearance, he could dispel it. And that really put me off Ouija boards for many, many years. But about 30 years later, I was having dinner with friends and I told them this story and they laughed and they said, oh, that's so ridiculous, you know, it's imagination and probably someone was moving the glass. And they said all the things that people usually say when they're skeptical. And I said to them, well, look, I'm not doing this in my house, but if you don't mind, I'll do it here for you and you can see for yourself. So we made another Ouija board and set it up. And I called in the spirits, and then I said to them, now, you're in charge of the board, not me. I'm not going to touch it, and we'll see what happens. And they all sat down, and the curtains blew in, and the atmosphere changed, and it became very electrical, and it was fairly obvious that we were receiving an entity from the other side. And the message he spelt out was to tell my husband and his co-worker, another policeman, to leave the room. And so with that, we just ended the game immediately.
Had you done any reading about Ouija boards before you sat down and started messing with them? Because, I mean, you know, it's pretty easy to find information that says this could be a bad idea here. I remember messing with them as a kid, and I could never tell if it was a subconscious movement caused by me or somebody else at the table was moving it. But it always there was always in the back of my mind a feeling that maybe this is opening up something that you don't want open.
Well, my father warned me, funnily enough, you should say that. I hadn't read that there were warnings about it, but my father had warned me. He said, don't get involved with this sort of thing. Sometimes it gets beyond your control. But because my friends, my young friends, were science students, I kind of believed that we were in control. I didn't realize that there could be powers stronger than us on our own plane of existence. I thought they'd be kind of weaker, and after all, they were only visiting our plane. But that's not the case. It can be extremely dangerous, and I've learned that, you know, since.
Have you played around with them since that second incident?
Absolutely not, and okay. Never in my house. Never, never, never. And friends of mine also had a nasty, nasty experience, neighbors of mine. So, you know, it can be a fairly dangerous thing to do.
So what is it? I mean, what's your theory? What was coming in? Spirit? Demon?
Yes,
the heck was it?
But spirits come, what we've discovered through our stories, as there are many planes of existence, and there are many levels of spirits, and they range from being outright evil to being angelic. There are all sorts of spirits. In fact, the Society for Psychic Research has identified about 20 categories of spirits, and I'm sure, you know, that's not an all-inclusive list. So you have many, many planes, and you have helpful spirits and benign spirits, and spirits that just go about their routine duties. It was just very unfortunate that the one that we got was one that was not so nice at all, you know?
Well, I would say, I mean, it had to occur to you that this spirit, whatever it was probably responsible for you feeling weird about that particular street in the first place. We'll come back, hear more of Marion Williams' stories from the new book. It's a metaphysical world, extraordinary stories from everyday life. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. A lot of good stuff still to come. We're talking with Marion Williams, co-author of It's a Metaphysical World. Just heard her Ouija board story. A lot of other entities and encounters she's had. We'll get into a lot of those, and then we'll open up the phone lines with your questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp, and tonight for George Norrie, talking with Marion K. Williams, the co-author of the new book, It's a Metaphysical World, Extraordinary Stories from Everyday Life. Marion, we heard your story about the Ouija board and this entity that you sort of encountered. You've had other encounters that are even more disturbing, and I guess your intuition led you to one of these things with the involving a fortune teller. Tell us that tale.
Oh, that was quite the scary tale. I love going to fortune tellers. I go about once a year. I have to say that in all the years I've been going, there have only been about three who have been outstanding. But one year I was out fencing a friend's farm for with a whole gang of us were out there working, and I met a lady I had not known before. And she said that she was going to a fortune teller the following evening, and that the fortune teller was also a healer. And because I'm trained in complementary medicine myself, I was very intrigued, and I thought, well, this is something I'd like to see. So I asked if she would mind if I came along. I intended to drive myself there and just drop in on the evening and see how things went. And she said to me, look, I'm going past your door. Why don't you come with me? And I got a message in my head that said no. And so I said, no, look, I'll bring my own car and then you can stay and I can go and we'll each be free. But she insisted. So against my better judgment, I took a ride with her and we drove to a neighboring town, which is about 20 minutes away, I'd say. And when we arrived there, we were greeted at the door by this fortune teller person. And she came up and she hugged my new friend and then turned to hug me. And when she did so, I had the most overwhelming urge to push her away. And I thought, oh, goodness, that's rude. I'm so rude. And I was kind of telling myself off in my head for being so unresponsive. But then we went, proceeded on into the room. And as I sat down, I noticed that the other people in the room were very different. And I didn't know what the difference was, except that they wouldn't look me in the eye. And they all looked kind of, there's no other way to describe it. They looked unlit somehow, as if they were dead inside. I just didn't know what to make of it. It was very peculiar. And then I noticed the artwork as well was also very, very odd. But, you're just sitting here taking in this and noticing this and that and thinking this is strange. And then the woman came in and she was very upbeat and she said that the evening would proceed in the following way. First, there would be a guided meditation. And then those that were hoping to have a healing session would be invited downstairs. And my new friend said to me that I would be welcome to watch her healing session. And so I settled in for the meditation. And it started off fairly normally. We were told to sit in our chairs and lighten our minds and close our eyes lightly and rest your tongue on the roof of your mouth and all the normal things that you do for a meditation. And then she said, we are now meditating to the light of Lucifer. Well, I
Oh,
got
boy.
the worst shock. My eyes flew open. They just flew open. And I found her staring right at me. So I flew around that room. I picked up my shoes and I ran for it. And I was so terrified that I took off in the opposite direction to my home because I thought if she comes after me, I don't want her to find me. And so I went running up the street and I knocked at a perfect stranger's door and asked to use their phone. They fortunately let me in and I called my husband and said, come and get me. And when he came and got me, he said, what on earth's the matter? And I said, I stumbled into a Satanist meeting. I can't believe it. And so I went home, and all the while I was feeling guilty because I left my friend there. But I really honestly panicked and ran for it. Over the next couple of hours, I was feeling so guilty. So eventually I rang her and I said, look, I'm sorry for running out on you, but I don't know if you know what you're mixed up in. And she informed me that, you know, I was very naive and unworldly, and that Lucifer was a Greek god. I said, he most certainly isn't. I think you ought to research this further. But we agreed to differ because she wouldn't listen. And I you can't make people understand. So I just said, well, I think you should look into this matter further. But the next day I was still very unsettled when I was going into work. So I put on a cross. And I just felt I needed to. And I was absolutely shocked when this fortune teller turned up at our office.
Oh, boy.
She clearly tracked me down. Now, this was downtown I was working, so she'd come in a good half hour to come in, and she was there, and I was horrified. And so I took my boss aside and you know, mentioned what had happened. And she was invited to leave immediately. But I was thoroughly shocked by this. Years and years later, I met up with that woman again socially, but her look had changed, completely changed. She now looked as if she had a light inside her. She didn't look so dead. And so I think that her source of intuition and healing and whatever had changed. But to tell you the truth, I wouldn't go anywhere near.
So you stumbled into a gathering of Satan worshippers.
Yes, I did. I did. And
it was so shocking. You had mentioned, you know, in the course of the research for the book and the stories you've heard, that you've encountered all kinds of different entities, spirits, whatever, some good, some really evil. What's your personal take on Lucifer? You think that's an actual entity that's, or these people were just praying to something that doesn't exist?
Well, it's interesting. Apparently, there's all sorts of biblical references to Lucifer as being a blend of fallen saints. I don't know that Lucifer was just one evil entity. I think it might have been more than one. Like Satan was a blend of evil spirits too. But I think when you call upon evil, you're going to get evil. It doesn't matter if it was a soul entity or a group of entities. You open yourself up to something absolutely frightful. And I can't imagine why anyone would do that. And it was certainly a shock to me when they did that.
Let's go to the other side of the spectrum. You say that there exist angels, angelic-type beings. What kind of proof do you have for that one? What kind of personal experiences?
Well, many years ago, I had a miscarriage. And sometimes when you have a miscarriage, you grieve in all sorts of strange ways. And my way of grieving was to work extremely hard. And I was a court reporter at the time, so I was working very hard on transcripts. And then I was sewing clothes for my children. And I was keeping too busy, if you know what I mean, just so that I didn't grieve so much. And one day when I was typing a transcript in my home, because I worked out of home primarily, the door slammed behind me. And that's unusual because our house is not drafty at all. And my transcript fell on the floor and it went all out of order. So it took ages to put it back into order because they run 300 and 400 pages. The minute I got it back in order and put it back on my desk, it went on the floor again. And then I turned, and as I turned, I saw the smallest, littlest angel standing in the doorway, you know, inside the doorway because the door was shut. And she just said, enough, and stamped her foot. And there was no doubt it was an angel, absolutely no doubt. And that was my experience of angels. Now, Elena, my co-writer, has had many more. She's had her car actually picked up twice now and moved completely out of harm's way on the highway when, you know, she would have been in for a head-on impact. Once when a car was traveling in the wrong set of lanes, towards her. So there's no doubt in my mind there are angels. As well, one of the women that I know is a hospice worker, and she routinely sees them, as does one of my sisters.
So angels in and around people who are about to pass over.
To pass over, yes. They come in times of need or times of stress or to help out. There's a thought that some actually manifest as humans and then they remarkably disappear. And Elena has one of those stories there where somebody arrived and just happened to point out that the inside rim of her tire was about... it was badly damaged, and in fact, the metal was poking through the wheel. You could not know that. Nobody could know that. They had to put it up on a hoist to really understand what had happened. Once the person had drawn that to her attention and she had promised to drop into the nearest town immediately, that person disappeared. She looked to see where he'd gone, and he was just disappeared. Now, is it a person with a supernatural intervention, or is it an angel? I'm not sure, but it doesn't much matter. He saved her life, you know, and her children's.
Our Coast listeners, of course, we hear these stories on a nightly basis. Some of them have some extraordinary experiences, as you're describing, but I don't know that there's anyone who's had the range of experiences that you've had, and we've just barely touched on them. You've had to have asked yourself, why you? I mean, these things happen to people all over the world, but not many people have them so many times in their life.
You think that was the case, but actually when you... I met a woman after church the other day, and she said, I read your book, and I really enjoyed the stories, but I've never had anything like that happen to me. And I said, really? You've never had deja vu or intuition about anything? And she stopped and thought. And then within 5 minutes, she'd recalled three extraordinary stories. I think that we don't stop and think about what happens in our lives. We just live them, and we just move on. And as I say, I thought I only had 10 stories till I sat down to write them. Once you actually pay attention to the synchronicity in your life and the intuition and the warnings that you get, you probably realize that pretty well everyone has these to various extents. And once you become aware, then more and more things happen and the range gets broadened, you know?
You talk about in several points in the book what we'll call, just for a generic term, ghosts, spirits, disembodied, whatever.
Yes.
You describe there are a range of those as well, different reasons why they hang around, what they want, how they intervene in our lives. Give me an example.
Well, I've had ghosts that have got me out of buildings where there was a gas leak that we weren't aware of. It had us vacate our offices, actually. We had not realized the extent of the danger we were in. I've had another ghost come in and scare me in my mother's home and say, get out. And I picked up my children and ran upstairs. Months later, the room that I'd been sleeping in actually fell through. There was a structural weakness, and it fell through to the basement level, the garage level below. So those are the sorts of ghostly people that help out. We've had others that simply go about their business. They may, put their lunch pail on the table and live their lives as they always have without realizing that they're dead. There are all manner of ghosts. There are helpful ones, benign ones, evil ones. Some don't know they're dead, and some don't know the pathway to the next plane, and they need the help of a minister or a shaman or perhaps even, you know, a psychic to show them the way, the pathway to the light, you know?
Have you been part of a ceremony like that?
No, I have not been part of it. Well, I've witnessed a ceremony. I haven't led it. When my parents died, after they died, we became aware that their home, which was previously a hospice for, soldiers from the war, was absolutely choked with ghosts who had come out because we were grieving. our parents' death. We were a very close family. And when we started to grieve, all these spirits that had maybe died in the house when it was a hospice came out. And we became very, very aware that they were lingering around. So we rang the local clergy and asked them to come and perform a ceremony. And they did. And they said these prayers in every single room. And the rooms burst into light. And the whole house felt so cleansed afterwards. And all these poor spirits that had hung around for maybe 40 years or since the war were shown the way to the light. And it was extraordinary. But I don't have the skill, ability, or training to do that work myself. I would much rather call in a minister, a priest. They are trained in this, and they do it so well. And they use prayers that have been used for eons. And I also believe that there's a power in well-used prayers, and that they carry their own strength. So I was witness to that, but I've never conducted a ceremony myself.
I'm sure that many of our listeners are wondering, and thinking to themselves, gosh, I'd really like to have some of these kinds of experiences to investigate this in their own lives. Is there something you can do to open yourself up to, I think we better limit it to the positive sort of experiences that you've had?
I think there are various ways. There are some wonderful mediums out there, some really good ones. John Edward, John Holland, they're good mediums. You should, drop in and see them at work. The other thing is you can meditate to get in touch with your angels. You can pray to get in touch with your angels. As for intuition and things like that, once you turn your mind to an intent where you want to develop your intuition, you'll find that you do. And once you learn to trust it, it's a matter of trust too. If you get a feeling, oh, maybe I shouldn't drive today at this particular time, then don't. Elena tells a wonderful story about getting a warning when she was going off for a walk that maybe she shouldn't go tonight. Well, she overruled her intuition and she went out, only to come across a bear, a fairly large bear. Now, she's learning to pay attention to her intuition because the warnings are there. And once you start to listen, it will develop. And deja vu, most people have deja vu, particularly their mothers with children. They have a sense when things are going right and when they're going wrong and what might go wrong. I think it's part of our innate human condition. Now, sometimes these psychic phenomena happen more often to some people. And we have superstars. We have Pat Price, who was investigated as part of the CIA scientific research. And he was a marvelous, marvelous superstar in remote viewing.
Right.
I'd put John Edward as a superstar. But most of us can muddle along with intuition, deja vu, maybe even remote viewing. That's happened to me. And just as you pay attention, your psychic powers will develop, because I think it is part of us.
I would imagine you've run into a few charlatans, though, along the way. There are many of those in these kinds
of
realms.
There are many.
Marion Williams, we promised to keep you for just an hour, but we've barely scratched the surface, and I know there are listeners would like to ask you a couple of questions. Hope you'll stick around for maybe another segment here, 30 minutes or so.
Well, yes.
Okay, all right. We're continuing our conversation with Marion Williams. It's a metaphysical world, and we open up the phone lines with your questions. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie. Stay with us for Coast to Coast AM.